Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Cardinal and the Owls. That's an exciting matchup. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I love that. What time of day will that be around here? Good grief.
Yeah, it was kind of a – I think Cal and Hawaii kicked off a little late our time, but it was early over there or whatever. I don't have a problem with college football playing international games, especially every now and then. But I think – I remember Clemson played Duke in Japan way back when. I think that, though, you look at sort of what some of these conferences are trying to do, I think they're clueless. I mean, I read where the former Texas AD spent a bunch of money going to Dubai on a fact-finding mission to expand the Texas brand. I mean, I just don't know that people in Dubai are going to be like, hook 'em horns. I just, you know, colleges are... It's college. It's not. Yeah. I mean, pro sports internationally. Yeah, I can definitely see it. College. I just don't know. I love college football. I just think I think the Pac-12 sometimes outthinks itself with some wonky, marketing ideas.
They think they're reaching out to the Pacific Rim. That's their plan.
That's their TPP, huh?
Yeah, that's where they're going. It is a great opportunity for the players. They'll get to go.
Oh, I love that. Love that part of
Australia, which is cool.
Hey, good day, mate.
Yeah. So they're going to keep doing it. It'll be the second straight regular season meeting between the two schools. Stanford hosted Rice in the 2016 regular season finale. So this one goes to Sydney. All right. The huddle underway here if you want to get on board at 844-477-3776. But right now, let's get to today's Hot Takes and Sausage.
And now, the beating frenzy of sports talk continues on Hot Takes and Sausage.
Hey, I smell bacon.
Order up on the huddle.
The Washington Post, which is my favorite newspaper, went back and evaluated the 2007 recruiting rankings, class of 2007, which featured Eric Berry, Cam Newton, Dez Bryant, and others. They used the Rivals 100, which kind of is near and dear to my heart because that was one of the first full lists that I was heavily involved with putting together. Only 39 of the listed 100 were drafted into the NFL, and 4 are now deceased. What struck me, though, and this is no surprise coming from the WAPO, was that they highlighted the guys with injuries, those that had died, and those that had suffered long-term negative effects from playing the sport, which was a very small percentage of the overall 100. The others, the success stories, were barely mentioned. Yet another example of the war on football that hits close to home for me because I was so involved in that process and got to know many of these guys personally. Quite frankly, I was happy that one of the top 100 players was now making a six-figure salary selling medical equipment. That's good. Tom Van Haren of ESPN.com mentioned that of the 72 quarterbacks that signed with Power 5 programs of the 2013 recruiting class, 59 did not finish with the program they started with. This is an astonishing statistic and shows you the crap-shooting nature of recruiting the most important position on the field. It also shows that in any given recruiting cycle, there are a lot of quarterbacks that simply don't have what it takes to make it. Billy Napier is going to Arizona State to be the offensive coordinator. While it is hard to make an argument that Clemson didn't upgrade when they fired Napier and went with Chad Morris in 2011, I always thought Napier was very capable of being a high-level play caller. The fit with the Sun Devils is a bit strange. Morris actually was Arizona State head coach Todd Graham's OC at Tulsa. And that's more the style that ASU and Graham's teams have historically played. But I have confidence that Napier, a former Furman quarterback and a really, really good one, will do some good things out there. The question is, how good does he have to do to save Graham's job? And now for the sausage. I've got the worst movie of the 1980s down to 3 finalists. Ishtar, Howard the Duck, and Mommy Dearest. Of those three, I'd have to go with Ishtar, because there were parts of Howard the Duck, like when he hooked up with Leah Thompson, and Mommy Dearest, like when she had the coat hanger situation, that I liked. The Dustin Hoffman and Warren Beatty desert movie annually is mentioned as one of the worst movies of all time, not just the 1980s. So after narrowing it down, I will proclaim Ishtar was the worst movie in the 80s, and that's Hot Takes and Sausage.
Did you watch Ishtar all the way through?
Yes.
I'm surprised you'll admit that.
I'll admit it, man. I watched Howard the Duck all the way through, too.
All the way through.
And Mommy Dearest.
And Mommy Dearest.
I watched Mommy Dearest when I was little.
Because that's about...
It scared me a little bit.
It reminded me of Home, by the way. So that's the one that disturbed me the most was Mommy Dearest, because I was like, Mom, what are you doing up there? But it, I'm not really joking, by the way.
Wow.
I never saw Ishtar.
No, me either.
Ishtar was... I was surprised Mommy Dearest was kind of in... There was about 15 of them, and I was surprised.
And it's based on a true story. Supposedly, she was really like that, so it was not surprising. Right. And as far as Howard the Duck goes, I agree. Leah Thompson, that was my... I really liked her as a teenager.
That's one way to put it. All right, Ishtar it is, from the 80s. By the way, did you guys see the E60 profile on Ernie Johnson Jr.?
No.
Golly, it was on last night. This thing is like 2 years old, and I just saw it last night.
Ernie Johnson Jr.
Yeah, Ernie. I mean, NBA guy for a TNT.
He's good.
He's great. But I never had much of an opinion, you know, I didn't know much about him. Man, that dude has been through some stuff. You know, his dad, I loved his dad, Ernie Johnson, the old Braves announcer. I mean, that goes back to the heyday of me listening to Braves on the radio.
Oh, yeah.
Ernie Johnson, Milo Hamilton, those guys way back in the day. And so, you know, I always thought about Ernie Johnson Sr. more than Junior.
Yeah, but, me too.
But Junior, he's gone through some stuff, man. I mean, he's had cancer. He and his wife adopted like four kids. He has six kids. Two of them were adopted. One of them was really a special needs kid that he got that he spends just days and weeks and hours taking care of. So I'm a fan now. Watch it if you can.
I need to watch that.
Yeah, I don't remember how they titled it, but it's Ernie Johnson on E60, a profile. Yeah.
I've always liked him. I love his interaction with the guys on that panel, I mean, on that show.
Yeah.
He's just, you would think that guy wouldn't fit. It has nothing to do with the race. He's so straight looking.
Right. He's funny, though.
He is very funny. And he's quick with the jabs here and there, and I really like him.
Yeah, I remember the old Braves, too. Skip Carey, Pete Van Weir, and Ernie Johnson. And then they added Don Sutton.
Yeah.
That was kind of the four-man booth that I kind of grew up listening to. I remember there's a movie, speaking of movies, The Slugger's Wife, where all those guys were in it. It was about a Braves player, and they all were kind of in that movie back before the Braves were good.
Never saw that one either.
That's actually good. It would not be on the worst movies of the 80s, but probably somewhere in the middle.
Well, I don't know how long ESPN cycles these E60s around, but maybe this is just a special thing where they didn't have anything else to play last night, but I was just flipping around.
I have to check it out.
Like 8 o'clock last night.
Probably get it on demand.
Yeah, you probably can. It's outstanding. Check it out if you can. DeMarcus Cousins, Boogie of the Kings, he's not going to be arrested. That's some good news for the Kings. This in the wake of a December nightclub incident in New York. Sources telling ESPN that DeMarcus Cousins has been cleared of all wrongdoing by authorities. This resulted from a December 5th altercation at a Manhattan club. Teammate Matt Barnes is facing misdemeanor assault charges. The player's lawyer, Alex Spiro, confirmed to ESPN today that Cousins has been cleared, but he's not commenting any further. The Sacramento Bee, the newspaper out in Sacramento, reported last week that Barnes is expected to turn himself into the New York Police Department and face those misdemeanor charges. But the paper said it was unclear whether that would happen during Sacramento's current 8-game road trip. They play pretty close to New York on tonight. They play in Philadelphia. It's not too far away. So he could run up there and maybe take care of that. The alleged assault took place at the Avenue nightclub after the Kings lost to the Knicks. We've talked about this before on this show, before you arrived here with us, JC, how NBA players will play these games and then hit the clubs after the games, and bad things can happen. And that happened December 4th. Barnes accused of choking a woman. He has maintained his innocence. Spiro said in a December statement that Barnes will cooperate with the investigation. Barnes and Cousins were together that night. They've been named in a civil suit stemming from the incident filed in a New York district court by two plaintiffs, Jasmine Basiso and Myrone Powell. The lawsuit alleges that Barnes grabbed Basiso by her neck, began choking her around 3 a.m. Cousins alleged to have punched Powell in the face after she had come to help Basiso. And Barnes is alleged to have elbowed Basiso in the face, knocking her unconscious. That is not a good look for the players. But again, they're clearing at least Cousins. A representative for Barnes told TMZ that Barnes was defending himself against a violent group of people. And Barnes went on Instagram in December and said simply, there are two sides to every story. But he's still facing the issue, but they have cleared Boogie Cousins. Not going to be arrested. So we'll watch that and see how it develops and see if Matt Barnes gets in and takes care of the misdemeanor assault charges that he is facing. 844-477-3776. The text line is 47183 here in the huddle. And you can get us on Twitter at ESPN Upstate. Still to come, going to talk a little more about Georgia Tech's basketball team and how they've been playing kind of up and down, but pretty well as of late. Right now, let's go to the phone and talk to Neil next. Neil, welcome into the huddle.
Good day, guys. I got a question for JC.
Right.
How many Division One recruits are in this year's class and next year's class, JC?
In, like, nationally or in what state?
Yeah,
in our
nationally.
State? Nationally, Division One. All right, so let's break it down to the Power Five. Power Five. That's a little more manageable. You know, so all right, so there's what 72. No, all right.
Making him do math here.
Yeah,
I'm
making
him do math. I got to get a calculator.
There's about approximately 1,800.
Okay.
1,750, give or take a few. As far as guys that'll sign, you know, average of 25 a class, and there's 70 Power 5 teams.
Mm-hmm.
Are there 70 Power 5 teams?
Sounds reasonable.
Say SEC 14, ACC 14, Big Ten 14, that's 42. Yeah. Pac-12 has 12, Big Ten has, so 64 plus Notre Dame. So I'm sorry, there's 65.
65.
Let me redo my math here. So 1,625.
Well, I don't feel like I'm taking the SAT here with you, Neil.
Yeah. Okay, that's what I thought for a minute. I was like, I was going to have to go back to school for a minute.
And see.
How many recruits are just in the big, like in South Carolina, for, say, kids coming out would be in those Power 5 schools?
South Carolina will probably send 25 to the Power 5 this year. Next year, that number could go to 30, 31. In fact, Andronicus Sanders, who I think is from Fort Dorchester, just committed to Georgia Tech today. So there's some guys kind of in the lower end. South Carolina's numbers as far as sending people to not necessarily Power 5, but FBS, it's the populations of Alabama and South Carolina are virtually the same. Alabama always sends more to FBS, though, because Troy, South Alabama, and UAB – all are FBS programs. They have five FBS programs in that state.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times in our state, the second-tier guys, rather than going to a Troy or a South Alabama or wherever, or Georgia State or out of state, they'll stay in state and sign with a Furman or a Coastal Carolina or a Charleston Southern or someplace like that, because we have a lot of 1AA FCS-level programs. Now, Coastal is going to the Sun Belt, so that'll be three FBS in the state of South Carolina, and I think as far as the FBS level numbers in this state, that they will go up, you know, once Coastal makes that move.
Okay. How about Brent Venables' kid? What kind of player is he?
He's a heck of a player. He's a big-time linebacker. I like his speed and instincts.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, being Brent Venables' kid, he's a guy that can mm-hmm. play the game and legitimate four-star prospect, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Already committed to Clemson, so they've got him ready to go. You know, Daniel High School's been very good to Clemson over the years.
No doubt.
You know, if you think about the Deshaun Williams, DeAndre Hopkins of the world, now you're getting Venables.
Shaq Lawson.
I mean, that's Daniel's
now,
been
what class will he be in?
He's class of 2018, so it's this next class coming up that they've already started on. He's already committed and ready. He'll probably be part of one of the top 3 to 5 recruiting classes in the country.
Okay.
Thank you, Neil. Appreciate
it. No problem, Neil.
That was announced today, made official today. He'll be on the Sunday NFL Countdown show. And that kind of makes a lot of sense, right? I mean, Rex Ryan has to be good at this, right? He has to be good on TV.
There's no way, the chances are very slim that he's not.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, I thought he's a good coach, too.
I've seen him on interviews and other things, and he does a really good job.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think he'll be, it depends on how well he meshes with everybody else, but I think he'll be good.
Yeah, I mean, but I've been wrong about him before. I thought he'd do a good job at Buffalo. He didn't. Thought he'd do a good job with the Jets. It was okay, but not that good. So maybe he is transitioning into his calling.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I've had a lot of faith in Rex Ryan before.
He may not be done with coaching. We'll see.
Maybe not. You know, I mean, he's a type of guy I pull for because I like that he's outspoken and I like he says some funny things, got a good personality, a lot like his dad, but he just hadn't really done much. And then his brother, excellent coordinator. You know, I call his brother Hard Rock Harry because he looks like he belongs, you know, it looks like a roadie for Slayer or something, you know. But
I wish if my hair turns gray, I want it to look just like that.
Oh, God, yeah. It'll be beautiful.
Be a good movie character. For sure.
Yeah, he's awesome. You know, I pull for the Ryan guys because I like their dad, and I think that they're good coaches.
And they got a kid at Clemson. He has a kid at Clemson.
Yes, he does. Dabo fan. So, yeah. In fact, somebody told me when Dan Brooks left, I don't know if we were talking about it here, Rex Ryan, would he be the next defensive line coach at Clemson?
Mm.
I think they got a good one, though, in the guy they hired.
Yeah. Wonder if Ryan will say anything snarky about the Patriots on TV. That'd be pretty good.
Loves the Patriots,
I could enjoy that. He's coached against the Patriots over the past 8 seasons as coach of the Bills and the Jets. Senior coordinating producer for ESPN, Seth Markman, said Rex is a great personality and has a unique perspective, and he's raring to go.
Do you bring a guy in like that and tell him, hey, you got to back off of certain things, or do you just let him go?
No.
I mean, because I don't think that he can back off.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be interesting to see.
Why would you want him to? I mean, I guess you've got the NFL contracts and all that to worry about. But
yeah, you don't want, I mean, I would guess Goodell would not want him lighting up the Patriots. Maybe he does.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Goodell lit up the Patriots.
Or maybe he's planting him there and saying, if you light up the Patriots, I guarantee you get a job next year. Because people seem to think that Goodell absolutely hates the Patriots and everything about them.
That's kind of a delicious conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Like, that's like a barbecue. That's an aplenty conspiracy theory.
From the Beacon.
Talking about our sponsor. I'm going to give our sponsor
sure.
a little plug there. So, that's a
if I go conspiracy,
theory.
I have to go to the extreme.
Because, I like that, though. I mean, but it's perfectly plausible is the thing.
Well, even if Rex doesn't get a full-time, long-term gig with ESPN, everybody wants him. Sports Business Daily said CBS, Fox, and NFL Network have reached out to Rex Ryan already. But he hasn't made it clear whether he wants to turn to TV now or whether he wants to try to come back to coaching. That's still up in the air. Reached the AFC Championship game each of his first 2 seasons at the Jets, but has not made the playoffs since. If you want to watch Rex Ryan on ESPN this Sunday, the show that he will be on airs from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. So, you know, well before the game.
See, here's the thing, because I always watch the NFL Network's coverage because I just like those guys. I really like Rich Eisen. But because Rex Ryan's there, I might tune over there and watch a little bit.
Very strategic hire, I think, as far as timing goes.
I think it would help their ratings for that show, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., when a lot of people will be probably browsing around just because there's nothing else to do, waiting for, a 6:30 kickoff?
Well, you're prepping your snacks at that point.
We got to talk about that, too.
I've actually got a birthday lunch I have to go to. My mom calls me up, and She's like, "What are you doing Sunday?" I forgot it was the Super Bowl.
There's a ball game.
And she's like, "Oh, it's, you know, her husband Gary's birthday. And we're all going to the German place in Hendersonville, North Carolina."
Oh, man. So there's travel involved.
I got to go to Henderson. Hopefully it's at like 1 o'clock. I got to go to Hendersonville, North Carolina, and then get my big butt back to Hooters and get a table in time to watch my Falcons play.
Watch it at Hooters. Super Bowl.
I will probably forecast at least a level 4 hangover in here on the show next Monday. So I'm just
going to
warn you.
Make sure I play the music extra loud for that.
Well, I'm going to come here with a huge bottle of water and sunglasses.
There's probably several things we could do to make Monday more painful for you.
Don't do it now that
you've told us.
Don't do it.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in the after show meeting after he's gone.
I shouldn't have said anything. Goodness gracious.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Clemson Tigers got a win over the weekend. And got their ACC record up to 2-6. They really, really need a win on Wednesday when the Tigers will take on Georgia Tech. The Yellow Jackets come in to Little John. 6:30 will be the airtime. 7 o'clock is the tip-off here on ESPN Upstate. And now they have a new guy to kind of worry about, a new guy for Brad Brownell to scout, and that's Tedrick Jackson, who poured in 25 points for Georgia Tech when the Yellow Jackets beat the Notre Dame Fighting Irish on Saturday, 62-60. And here's some of Jackson's comments after that performance on Saturday.
Tedrick, of course, a huge game for you, career-high 25 points, but maybe the most important play you made in this game was a rebound and a pass ahead to Kogi for the game-winning layup. What was going through your mind that short period of time?
Well, Coach always on us about guard rebounds. You know, if we don't get guard rebounds, then we won't have a good chance to win. So I know how to stick my nose in there and get a rebound. And then I didn't panic, so I saw Josh Kogi up the floor and then gave it to him.
Now, 7 points for you combined in your last two games coming in today. What's in your mindset? How do you go off for 25?
You know, I just stay locked in. You know, don't rush the process. Got to keep trusting it. You know, I keep working out every day. You know what I'm saying? My time came. You know, I performed. You know, Coach said it's going to be my game.
And for you guys now, a third win over a top 10 opponent, how does this feel to get this done in your home court?
Oh, it's good. It's great. Had a great fans. You know, we had great support. You know, the coaches, that everybody believed in us. And we just came out here and played hard with a lot of energy.
Yeah, so Georgia Tech's now 13-8 overall, but they're 5-4 in the league. And so Clemson at 12-8 and 2-6 in the league. And yet Clemson is way ahead of Georgia Tech in the RPI. And you know what you can thank for that in part, JC, is Clemson's win over South Carolina. That's still paying dividends for them.
Yeah, and then you got Georgia Tech dropping a 17-point game to Georgia at home earlier this year. So, yeah, it's Clemson's win over South Carolina was significant. I think their win over Georgia has helped. I think their win over Alabama. Alabama's 6-2 in the SEC right now has helped. And then, you know, with the way the ACC schedule sets up, just about every win is going to be big. Georgia Tech has 5 top 50 RPI victories this year. And sometimes it's who you beat and who they beat. And so even though Georgia Tech's kind of in the 60s in the RPI right now, if Clemson wins, that's going to help the Tigers, I think, kind of stay in that 40 range. And as long as they're there, Greg, I think they still have a shot to make it. I think they have to get within two games, you know, to an 8-10 record in the ACC at a minimum, and then maybe win a game or two in the conference tournament. But I still think they're going to remain on the bubble because of their strength of schedule, because of their RPI, and all that.
So you're saying they got to get 6 more ACC wins just to have a shot. So they need this game.
This is a huge, huge. It's. Let me just tell you, believe me, it's huge. It's absolutely huge.
It's the biggest game ever.
Bigly.
It's bigly. The game after this will be difficult for the Tigers because on Saturday they have to play at Florida, or Sunday rather, they play at Florida State in a noon game. And Florida State right now 18-4. On the year.
But Florida State lost at Tech, I think, by 22, and they lost to Syracuse this past weekend. So they're kind of coming back to earth a little bit. Jerry Palm on CBSSports.com wrote today about the top of the ACC being a little jumbled, but still thought Florida State had the best chance of winning the league. But I think that, you know, that's an opportunity to go down to Tallahassee and pull a gigantic upset. Which would further help Clemson. You know, I think we look at the schedule and we see that Duke game is probably, you know, more you know, a little tougher than the Florida State game. But I don't know. You know, I think Florida State's probably better than Duke this year. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, it could be a situation where, you know, the Tigers have a chance to get hot here. Kind of like that, you know, if they could just get a streak going like they did last season where they won those games right there in a row, beat Louisville, beat Virginia, they didn't beat Virginia. They beat Syracuse. If they can get run all four or five in a row, they could be in excellent position to make the big dance. And I don't know that Clemson won't get sent to Greenville either. It would surprise me because it's so close. But I don't know that they wouldn't send Clemson to Greenville to play in the first and second round.
Considering they played their home games in that arena last year.
Yeah, that may be a consideration. I think the Gamecocks are more likely, but, you know, you never know. It's not Clemson's home court, so it's in play.
Yeah, they got some work to do before they worry about that. North Carolina, 7-2 to lead the ACC right now. Just a half game ahead of Virginia, 6-2, Florida State, Louisville, and Notre Dame all at 6-3. You see the putback by Villanova to beat Virginia over the weekend. 61-59, so Virginia took the then number one team down to the wire in that game. And Virginia had won, five in a row going into that ballgame. So that was a big win for Villanova.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Virginia and Virginia played them tough. You know, Virginia's got a good team this year. They're always going to kind of be that team that plays games in the 60s that's pretty good.
Folks, at the sporting news out today with another bracket projection for the NCAA basketball tournament. And yes, they have both Clemson and South Carolina in the tournament. First, I'll tell you where they have the one seeds. Their one seeds, the Sporting News one seeds right now, are Baylor, Villanova, Kansas, and Gonzaga. And then as two seeds, they have Arizona out of the Pac-12, Louisville, and Virginia out of the ACC, and Kentucky out of the SEC, all at two seeds. Their three seeds are UCLA, North Carolina, Oregon, and Florida State. It's a pretty hefty ranking for the Seminoles there. Four seeds, Wisconsin, Cincinnati, West Virginia, and Butler. The Sporting News five seeds right now, Notre Dame, Creighton, Maryland, and Purdue. And their six seeds, two teams from the SEC, the South Carolina Gamecocks and Florida, as six seeds.
Well, that's just lazy, I think, to do that. Mm. I mean, I understand the Gamecocks being a six. But, Florida has a top 10 RPI. They're ninth in the RPI.
Mm-hmm.
How are they going to be a sixth? They're 11th in the RPI. They were ninth last week. How are they going to end up as a six seed? I think some people are editorializing based on the AP rankings, which mean nothing,
right?
As it relates to the NCAA tournament, not looking at the RPI, and really just trying to project downgrade the SEC. And hey, it may turn out that way, Greg. It may turn out that South Carolina and Florida are sixes. But you know, last week they were like South Carolina is going to be a nine or an eight. They haven't really beaten anybody of significance. You know, they beat LSU, they beat Auburn. So it's funny how at different times these projections, you know, put something out there that you think's kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, lazy. They're just kind of looking at the names and putting it out there.
Well, they've got the RPI on here, so at least they see it.
And then 2 weeks later, you know, they catch up with the reality of it.
Here's what Sporting News says about the Gamecocks. They say, at this point, everyone should stop comparing this year's South Carolina team with last year's South Carolina team. Last year's Gamecocks entered conference play with a shiny but suspect non-conference record. Then they lost a bunch of games to mediocre SEC squads. This year's Gamecocks played a better non-con schedule, and they've taken care of business in the SEC, with the one loss being at Kentucky. Barring a complete and total collapse, South Carolina should feel confident on Selection Sunday. But anyway, to continue down, you get down to the nine seeds, and they have both Clemson and Georgia Tech as nine seeds. Let's see what they say about the Clemson Tigers. Clemson is another difficult team to place. The Tigers have eight losses, but only one is against a team not in this week's field. And that one, neutral court versus Oklahoma, came back in November when Shelton Mitchell was out. The Tigers have wins away from home against South Carolina, Wake Forest, Pitt, Alabama, and Davidson. And so they got him in at a 9. You take that if you're Clemson, for sure.
Yeah, I think so. I think that shows you, too, that their strength of schedule is good and the ACC is good, et cetera.
Yeah. As far as teams on the bubble, according to the Sporting News, North Carolina State, Indiana. Indiana could miss the tournament this year. How about that? And they started off gangbusters.
Yeah.
They had some big early wins. Got Tennessee on the bubble.
Tennessee's played their way up there with the win over Kentucky and followed up with a win over K-State. They've and they had a good non-conference schedule. Played North Carolina within two at Chapel Hill. So the Vols could legitimately make it.
They have Wake Forest on the bubble. A 12-9 record. Pittsburgh, who Clemson just beat, they have on the bubble. And they have Georgia out of the SEC on the bubble. And then teams they have kind of below the bubble, they have an outside shot as far as conference teams from the SEC or ACC. They have Auburn. They have Alabama. Vanderbilt with their 10-11 record. Syracuse. And Texas A&M. Those are the ACC, SEC teams who are just bubbling under, so to speak, right now from the Sporting News, for what it's worth. But good news from around here, they're both South Carolina and Clemson in, and fairly high seeds, 6 for South Carolina, and 9 for the Clemson Tigers. Clemson-Georgia Tech game coming up on Wednesday. We'll maybe change that for one of those teams. We'll watch that. All right, it's 3:47 here. Last chance for phone calls if you want to get in at 844-477-3776. Final break. We'll come back and wrap it up. In the huddle for Monday on ESPN Upstate. Stay with us. Man, Sage Steele is catching some heat. You hear about the ESPN anchor? She vented about missing her flight because of airport immigration protesters. She posted a photo of protesters speaking out against Donald Trump's order to suspend immigration from 7 nations at LAX on Sunday night. In the caption, she noted that she and other passengers had to drag luggage nearly 2 miles to get to the airport. What? 2 miles? And still missed their flights. She went on to say she loves seeing people exercise their right to protest, but was saddened to see the joy on their faces knowing they were successful in disrupting so many people's travel plans. And so that blew up on Twitter.
How could she be so insensitive?
Blew up, man. I mean, just tons of stuff on that. I don't think she got in trouble with ESPN yet.
Not yet.
That usually happens.
She'll end up being suspended for and have to take sensitivity training or something like that. More than likely.
Wouldn't be surprised. That just happened last night. So we'll watch and see what happens with Sage Steele. I mean, just getting ripped, getting ripped on Twitter.
What?
Over the last couple of. Over the last 24
hours. I'm not going to comment on this, but and get into the political aspects of it, but it's a little bit of overreaction out there about the whole thing.
No.
And I'll just leave it at that.
Well, she is, I mean, we're just talking about, look, if she doesn't like not being able to catch her flight, who can blame her? Would you like that? I wouldn't like that. Who would like that? No matter how you feel about
protesting.
Maybe
you're documenting it so your boss will understand why you're not there on time because you missed your flight.
You know, it's against the moral code of half these people on Twitter who didn't even vote that, that anybody says anything against a massive protest over a law that there's a lot of misinformation out there about.
You can come down wherever you want
on
the immigration thing without wanting your path to your plane blocked.
I know. I mean, it's ridiculous. She didn't do anything.
Right.
I mean, she's not the target of anybody. But, I'm sure somebody tweeted, check your privilege or whatever.
Oh, there's tons of them, man. There's tons of them.
Check yourself,
tons
man. And these people are ridiculous.
All right, we'll leave you with this. Going out, John Clayton is out with his greatest of all time NFL quarterbacks list. And he has Tom Brady at number one. Kind of hard to argue with. The thing about Brady is how good he's gotten so late in his career. Just keeps getting better. I mean, his interceptions are down. His passer ratings going up. Yards per attempt going up. I don't have any basis for arguing Tom Brady is the greatest of all time. You guys? I know you hate him, Lonzo, but
it's ironic you're talking about this as the Patriots are exiting the plane in Houston.
You know, he's proving it on the field. So Clayton goes with Brady at one. He goes with Joe Montana at two.
See, I'm always going to go with Montana at one. And I think it has to do with when you came up and when you started watching. I mean, you can't – I mean, you can argue that Brady is the best. He's got the credentials and everything. But still, in the end, if he wins a couple more, I guess there's no denying
it. I mean, my goodness, the length of the career, though, the difference in that is somewhat significant. But, yeah, he won – Montana won, what, four Super Bowls? Yep.
Won every one he was in, right?
He was, yeah. So that's pretty
impressive. Brady can't say that. I mean, he got there, but he didn't win every one of them. Why can't we use the LeBron analogy on him? You know, LeBron went to all those and he lost them all. Well, Brady went to a bunch and lost them all. Why doesn't he get the same scrutiny?
Getting to them is pretty good, too. I mean, it's not bad either.
That didn't work with LeBron, I'm just saying.
Peyton Manning at three, according to Clayton. Yeah, okay. And then Johnny Unitas. How about the love for the Colts there? Johnny U at number four. And going back a while to Otto Graham. Otto Graham was fantastic. We didn't really see much of Otto Graham.
I was going to say, really? Was he?
Yeah, he was at number five. He won NFL titles in 1950, 1954, and 1955. Not Super Bowl titles, of course, but NFL titles. He was a running back in a wing T offense.
That's back when the Cleveland Browns won championships way back then.
Yeah, that's where he did it. And then finishing out the top 10, according to Mr. Clayton, John Elway, the Denver Broncos, Brett Favre,
my boy.
My boy Brett.
Your boy.
At number seven. They say a Green Bay Packers team doctor failed Favre on a physical when the Packers traded for him. And then he went on to become the Iron Man of the sport. I'd forgotten that. He failed his physical when the Falcons brought him, traded him to Green Bay. But he also leads the NFL in career interceptions, 336. And he's at seven.
So you go dwell on the negative, not the positive.
I'm pointing out the stats here. And he stayed too long in Green Bay and didn't let my boy Aaron Rodgers get on the field. Dan Marino at eight, of course, never won a title. But he was MVP in 1984. Great arm. Bradshaw, Terry Bradshaw at number nine. He won, what, four of them?
So Marino above Bradshaw.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
How about that? No titles for Marino, four for Bradshaw. And then they've got A-Rod, Aaron Rodgers at 10. Two titles. No, I'm sorry. One title, two MVPs. 2011 and 2014. Yeah. All right. And then Bart Starr with the Packers at 11. So we're going to do the top 11 since there's another Packer at number 11.
The top 11, hot 11.
The hot 11. Thanks for listening. Hey, tomorrow here in the huddle, we're going to have Anna Hickey with Clemson 24/7. We'll talk about signing day coming up. She'll join us at right after 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. And we'll have much more run-up to the Super Bowl, college basketball, and more. So join us at 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon.
Vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.